Hello and welcome to the National Trust Surrey Hills podcast. I'm Jo Dyson. And today I'm just 15 miles as the crow flies from Hyde Park Corner, but I'm in one of the world's rarest habitats, rarer even than the rainforests. Where am I? Today I'm at Headley Heath in Surrey. Once the site of a military training ground, which must have been so noisy at times, and yet now it's such a peaceful place. As you can probably hear in the background, it's a top spot for birds and reptile lovers, long distance walkers and some furry friends. I'm really looking forward to exploring today. Here at Headley Heath in Surrey, it is one of the most flourishing heathland sites in the country. It's within the Surrey Hills and connected to other neighbouring landscapes like Box Hill, with loads of beautiful walking paths. I've been told it's a gem to explore and I can't wait to learn more about its amazing plants and animals. I've arranged to meet with Headley Heath's area ranger, Theo Howard, who I think I can see just up ahead on the left by a big pond. Or is this a lake? Hi, you must be Theo.
Hi, nice to meet you, Jo. How are you doing?
Yeah, good, thank you. Thanks for inviting me along. So we're standing beside, what is this, Theo? Perhaps you can tell me where we are.
So this is Brimmer Pond, probably one of the bigger ponds on Headley Heath. And I've just spotted a few newts popping up to the surface, which is very exciting.
Brilliant. Can we see any now?
If you're patient.
Can't get a good enough look at them to see what kind of newts they are, but they could be either great crested or palmate newts.
And are they quite rare, those newts?
The great crested newt is a protected species. It's fairly abundant on Headley, but kind of nationally fairly scarce.
There's a sort of fence, wooden fence going through the middle of this pond. Can you tell me about how the fence is
So made? We decided to partition the pond. The post is sweet chestnut from one of our plantations just off Headley proper, off the common. And the hazel is from oyster wood, which is another part associated with Headley, which is a hazel coppice. So it's all kind of locally sourced wood. The reason we put the partition in is to prevent dog disturbance on part of the pond.
Okay, what, so dogs off leads?
So dogs off leads, I mean, part of the reason Headley is so popular is with dog walkers. It's lovely, it's flat, it's relatively open, but when they come rushing into the pond, they can kind of deteriorate the plant matter, cause a load of the silt to come up, stop the light from going down, and eventually it kills off the plants. They can't really survive. So by putting the partition in, it's leaving an area that will have a lot less disturbance, allowing the pond flora to flourish.
Yeah, I mean, there's a very happy looking duck over there, just on its own.
Yeah, probably nibbling on some of the pond invertebrates.
I mean, what I love about it, as we're stood here, Theo, it's so peaceful and you can hear beautiful birdsong in the background. But also, because the pond is so still, you can see a lovely reflection of the trees in the water and also that rather beautiful fence you've just been describing with the sweet chestnut. It's a really beautiful spot.
It's quite exciting, yeah. Every so often you can just see the water ripple and...
Oh, yes.
Let's think.
So would that be the signs of a newt?
That's the newt bopping up to the surface, yeah.
So we've left the pond behind us and we're walking along a rather sort of squelchy, muddy path, quite wide and surrounded by trees either side. What sort of trees are these, Theo?
This is predominantly silver birch with a few bits of goat willow and a couple of oaks thrown in as well.
A couple of oaks thrown in for good measure. And where are we headed along this path?
So we're heading towards Canada Heath, which is an area which is currently acid grassland.
Okay.
Which is kind of defined by having a pH in the soil of less than 5.5.
Is this a special landscape? What sort of things grow in an acid grassland?
So we're starting to see a lot of pioneer heather, bell heather predominantly, but some ling coming through. We have various grasses, kind of fescues and Yorkshire fog, and some small herbs, kind of heath speedwell and sheep sorrel. And these are all kind of low nutrient plants that have adapted to low nutrient conditions and can survive in the acidic soils.
So I was told, Theo, that this is one of the rarest habitats in the world. Is that really the case?
Yes, because the main reason for that is almost all heathlands are on sandy soils. So they're sandy, free-draining soils, and that is almost quintessentially the base to all heathlands, because these areas aren't as predominant as other kind of soil types, kind of like clay, and there was kind of less to start.
Yeah.
And in the last 150 years, we've lost about 80% of our lowland heathlands in the UK.
80%? Why have we lost such a huge amount?
Historically, heathlands were managed by local communities. You can't grow crops because the quality of the soil is so poor. So what you can do is graze animals. You can take a lot of the trees away for firewood and for building structure. So people's kind of livelihood depended on these areas. And it's basically since the Industrial Revolution, where people didn't need to depend on their kind of local resources as much anymore, because things were being produced in such mass quantity, that they kind of got ignored. Now, when that happens, what you see is the secondary woodland start to take hold, which is kind of what I described a minute ago. Normally, silver birch, being a kind of pioneer species, is one of the first things to colonise an area like a heathland.
Yeah, lots of greens and browns. But we can see for miles ahead now. We've just turned a corner.
Yeah.
What is it that we can see straight ahead over there? There's lots of trees and we seem to see for miles.
It's been quite a lot of kind of continual management to keep it in the state that it is. So, as I said, kind of one of the first things that will start to pop up is silver birch. So we try and remove those to stop the succession running into secondary woodland again. Lots of brambles and lots of bracken appear as well.
Yes, I mean, we're surrounded either side now by bramble, aren't we?
So yeah.
and some fern, are they there?
Yeah, that's the bracken.
Yeah, the bracken and the silver birch. I mean, so now we're coming out into a sort of clearing, aren't we? I mean, the view in the background is just beautiful. Where are we looking out towards?
The closest kind of hillside is Headley Warren, which goes onto the Mickleham Downs.
Yeah, I mean, it's beautiful. It's quite a sort of cloudy grey day today, but there's a beautiful sort of blue horizon, isn't there?
As I said, we've started to see loads of pioneer heather pop up here in the last kind of 2 or 3 years, and that's from getting the birch saplings out. We use tree poppers on mattocks, and that exposes the seed bank and lets the heather kind of start to grow, and we're really starting to see more and more. So this is slowly transforming from an acid grassland to a heathland, which is brilliant. But once we kind of get to the stage where we are seeing more and more heathland, it's trying to connect those bits of heathland so that the animals have plenty of space to do what animals do.
Travel around.
Look for food, Great. Look for mates, all that good stuff.
So with the growing heathland, which I see what you're pointing out here, Theo, the little, brighter green patches that are sprouting up in front of us, does that mean that you're creating new habitats then, and therefore you're seeing new wildlife move in?
So I guess rather than creating new habitats, it's reclaiming old habitats. So
is it the ground nesting bird?
Last summer I heard nightjars. They're incredibly elusive, incredibly hard to actually lay eyes on. They're super well camouflaged, and they rely on their camouflage, in fact, and their sight. So they'll sit in a clear opening like this, and they won't move until basically you almost step on them. Then they will fly away. So they're completely committed to their camouflage as a defence mechanism.
I love that, committed to their camouflage. They'll leave it right up until the wire.
And there's absolute boatloads of small copper butterflies, which is really nice to see. Headley is also one of the best spots in the southeast for the grizzled skipper, which is another type of butterfly.
What's a grizzled skipper?
Yeah. Another small butterfly, wingspan of maybe 20 millimetres.
Oh, wow, very small.
But we have all four of the food plants here, some of which are kind of more neutral, some of which are a bit kind of more chalk dependent, but wild strawberry, barren strawberry, common agrimony and creeping cinquefoil, I think, are the four food plants for that.
I mean,
and we have those are in abundance here.
Oh, great names. So for anyone listening, what does a grizzled skipper butterfly look like?
It's fairly small and unassuming, hence the grizzled part of it, I suppose. But it's black with kind of whitish marks.
Okay, so if you see a little black butterfly here, 2 centimetres in diameter, wingspan. Yeah, it could, with some white dots, it could be a grizzled skipper. That's brilliant. And so I'm understanding why this is a heathland with this, the heath coming back, but why Canada heath?
So the Canadians trained on Headley as part of the frontier for a defence against a German invasion.
Okay.
And then for the D-Day landings.
So what would they do here then, the Canadians?
I mean, you can see, if we wander down a little bit, you can see some trenches that they dug out.
Yeah, let's...
They built terraces into the side of a hill as a training exercise to get vehicles up into awkward places.
Oh, right. So this really was a test bed.
This is one of the kind of mini trenches that they would have dug.
Oh, right. Yes.
As you can see,
it's sort of the length of a small person, with so enough for them to sort of lie down in it.
Yep, someone could lie down, poke their head over the top, and lean against the kind of the knoll, rifle pointing over.
Yeah, and now this sort of this ditch that's the size of a person,
about 6 foot wide,
yes,
yeah, that.
6 foot long, yeah, a foot wide or something, is now surrounded by this lovely sort of newly emerging yellow gorse bush.
Yes, yep. So a big part of the management is controlling the European gorse. We don't want to get rid of it. It's a great habitat for birds. Willow warblers in particular really like gorse because it's such a good kind of defensive place to be.
What, they hide within it?
They hide within it, but gorse is in the, I think it's in the pea or legume family.
Okay.
And when the flowers are fertilised, the seed heads will pop. So if you're walking around in the summer, you can hear a popping almost like popcorn.
Oh,
and that is
amazing.
The gorse spitting out its seeds. So it can spread quite rapidly because it's the seeds are being launched meters from the mother kind of mother bush.
That's brilliant. So I'll need to come back in the summer and just sit
just
quietly by
popping
here. I love that. So there's human trenches that they used to hide in, and then the gorse provides another hiding space for the willow warblers as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Brilliant. So Theo, we're seeing gorse coming up, but what else would define a heathland? How would we know when you're seeing heathland?
So similar to acid grassland with that pH of less than 5.5, typically on sandy soils, but it's really the low hardy shrubs that grow. And on Headley, we have both bell heather and ling, or common heather, European gorse, which is the big stuff, and dwarf gorse, which is the smaller stuff. Those are kind of the quintessential heathland plants. More in the southwest, you'll also see cross-leaved heather, and all of this would be intermingled with various grasses, hence the animals grazing.
So are we going to see some animals grazing shortly then?
Yes, I believe they're kind of just round the corner actually. A couple of hundred metres that way.
And how do you know this?
We have a really wonderful, innovative system called No Fence.
No Fence?
Yes, which allows us to... Essentially, each of the cattle has a collar, and this collar has a GPS kind of receiver. So we can set what they call geofences, which is basically a kind of a compartment for them to graze in.
Right, so if I get this right, what you mean is that instead of moving a physical fence and herding the cattle, you're sort of sat there with your phone moving a geofence.
Well, exactly. So we have predefined areas on the app. But yeah, I'll get a bucket with some cow nuts, smartphone in one hand, calling them. They're normally pretty good, and then we'll come if they're called. So I'm looking at my phone now.
Oh, let's see.
And so you can see the kind of the blue area. That's the defined compartment that they're in. The little white dots are all the cattle.
Oh, they're all along one side of the blue line, which is the fence, presumably.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
And so how long would it have taken you previously to track down the cattle? So are you saying this is... How big a landscape is Headley?
So Headley in total is 500 acres. This grazing compartment is about 250, so about half of that. So before we had the no-fence system, it could have taken best part of a day to find the cattle.
So I'm looking to the right and I can see about seven cows, and they are black but with big white belts.
Yep.
And so what can you tell me a bit about this breed of cattle?
So they are called belted Galloways, and they are kind of one of the favoured breeds of cattle for conservation grazing. They are incredibly well tempered. They're not really fazed by much, they're not fazed by people, they're not fazed by dogs.
They are the chilled cow variety.
Yeah, exactly. And they're a hardy species, so they can be out on the heath all year round.
Yeah, a couple have stopped taking a photo.
That's why I'm glad we could find the cattle for you, because they're such an iconic part of the character of Headley. One of the other pressures with the cattle is there's 10 on site at the moment. We did have 13, but unfortunately due to a dog attack, I had to take one of them off, and they take them off in a small group so they don't get too distressed kind of in the travel back to the farm.
What, on their own?
On their own, yeah. So she's fully recovered now, she's okay, but we've not got her back onto the heath yet. But that is one of the kind of biggest pressures, is with dogs. We talked about the pond disturbance earlier, but there was also kind of, they have a tendency to chase the cattle, which can cause them to be injured either directly from the dog attack or from tripping up and breaking a bone.
So what does that mean, that do dog walkers need to keep their dogs on a lead? Or
so when they're in a grazing compartment, the dog should be on a lead.
So Theo, I mean, I'm not always out on location like this, but this is your office, if you like. This is your work base.
I am lucky enough to call this my office.
Yeah, very lucky. What got you into this sort of work, being a ranger?
I was working as a kind of handyman, doing a bit of carpentry and stuff, and I got a job with a treehouse company.
Oh, fun! What, building treehouses?
Building treehouses, which really kind of, I guess, gave me the realisation that I really just loved being outdoors in amazing spaces. And from that, one of my friends was actually one of my predecessors, so he used to be the area ranger here. And I was down the pub talking to him, and he was asking what the best way to get into the industry was, and he said, start volunteering. So I came out, started coming out with the Thursday and Friday groups with Headley. And from there, became a what was called a long-term volunteer before is now called an immersive ranger, which is kind of working closely with the ranger team 3 days a week, just to kind of build up the experience and the site knowledge.
We're on this beautiful path, and for the sort of the untrained eye, you'd just be looking out and seeing lots of lovely green shades of bright green, the yellow gorse, and then the dark woodland in the backdrop.
But in the summer, background. This will be absolutely littered with wildflowers, so there'll be a real splash of colour here.
Oh, and I think to come back in the summer.
Yeah, seeing that juxtaposed to something like the gorse, if you're really kind of paying attention, it might twig. But no, I think it is, as you say, it is very unassuming, and I think lots of people probably don't know just how rare and special lots of the stuff we have here on Headley is.
Yeah, so what sort of colour flowers would we see here coming back in the summer?
So you can see the marjoram seed heads here. So these have a lovely purple hue to them. So I kind of mentioned this area is called Orchid Slope. So you'll see loads of common spotted and fragrant orchids, which tend to be a kind of pinky, purpley, whitey kind of mix. Loads of rock rose as well, which are these delicate little yellow flowers. Something called squinancy wort, which tiny little white flowers that kind of travel along in vines, and they're absolutely brilliant. It looks like there's almost been kind of icing sugar sprinkled on the place.
Oh, it sounds beautiful. So what's the best time of the year to see orchids if I was to come back?
Between kind of May and, or maybe April and kind of June, July.
Okay, great.
So really late spring, early summer.
Yeah, that's the lovely thing about walks as well, isn't it? It's a changing landscape depending on what time of year you're visiting.
Yeah, exactly.
Theo, thank you. That's been so interesting hearing all about Headley Heath and how the Canadian military trained here.
That is my pleasure. As I said, you must come back in the summer and see all the wildflowers.
Yeah, I will. I'd love to come and see the orchids and see where you've moved the belted Galloway to as well. Great, well, have a good rest of the day.
You too, lovely to meet you.
You too, thanks, Theo. I've had a brilliant time today at Headley Heath. Who knew it was just so bursting with wildlife and fascinating stories of how humans have changed and helped habitats to flourish. It's astonishing to think that 80 years ago, this site was intensively used for army training, and now it's an absolute haven for wildlife. I'm definitely going to take Theo up on the offer and be back in the spring and the summer to see the orchids. Thank you for listening to this episode of the National Trust Surrey Hills podcast. To find out more, go to nationaltrust.org.uk/Surrey Hills.